Hi, I'm Scott Finn, Executive Director at West Virginia Public Broadcasting, and you're on The Front Porch. I'm here with Rick Wilson of the American Friends Service Committee and Lori Lynn of the Charleston Daily Mail. Hey, guys.
Hey. Guys.
Today we're talking about Appalachian accents and how they affect people's views of folks from Appalachia. There has been a lot of study on this. One that sticks out in my mind is a study of Southern accents. Children who are in Chicago, even young children who have played a Southern accent, think that the people who have that accent are less intelligent and friendlier. Rick, as the person that has, of the three of us, the stereotypical Appalachian accent, how's it played out in your life? Do you think it's changed how people see you?
You know, it's the kind of thing you don't notice. You know, growing up here, you notice it when you travel, or you notice it when you're going around people who are different or when they come here. And it's, in some ways, it's been a source of great fun and amusement. Like when my wife and I first met each other in New England, we'd be working with groups, and she'd say, if anyone needs a translation, I speak hillbilly, you know, and you know, sometimes you can kind of play with it and have fun with it, but I didn't realize it until probably I was in junior high and started talking to Huntington girls, and Huntington, as you guys know, is this Babylon, you know, and I was an innocent boy from the sticks, and so some of my accents, some of my expressions, they just thought was hilarious.
So when they say it's hilarious, were they making fun of it? I mean, they weren't laughing with you, were they?
Probably not, no. I mean, at a certain point, I would have been right there with them, but not right then. I remember one time I said, I reckon, and someone said, what? You know, I reckon. And I had to explain to him what it meant, and then she said, I'd reckon. I said, no, you don't say it like that.
This story has gone nationwide recently. AP did a story that was in the Washington Post, all over the place, about WVU and their study of Appalachian dialects. Some of the distinctive features that are still at play, the difference between the thing that you write with and the thing that you prick your finger.
They're both pens, Scott. Just deal with it. And people have called me out on that one quite a bit.
It's not pen and pin?
No.
What?
Pen. I can't even say that without cringing.
Inserting an R, like I'm going to go wash my hands. Apparently, if you had lived in George Washington's time, it would have been George Washington.
One thing distinct from the Deep South, you know, Rick Bragg said, at least we pronounce our R's, say what you want about the word. We don't say mother, we say mother. You know, we at least have the letter R in our vocabulary.
Right, you insert it in places like Holler,
where it actually isn't. Yeah, I like the letter R. So, yeah. But, you know, there's some research, and it's a little controversial. You look at the early settlement patterns of North America, people from East Anglia predominantly maybe settled in New England, and they were Puritans, they had certain ways, and Southern England, possibly in the Deep South, and around Appalachia, there are a lot of people from Northern England, Southern Scotland, you know, which eventually became Scotch-Irish, which is a different area with its own. I think Appalachian is different from Southern, too,
in terms of accents.
Yeah, and there's certain words, like haint, you know, is a good Appalachian word, and, you know, poke, which could be a bag or a jabbing at somebody. My grandmother had a saying, pert nigh but not plum, which I just loved.
Say that slower.
Pert nigh, but not plum.
I have no idea what that means.
Pretty near, but not all the way there. Oh. Close, but no cigars.
Wow. Goodness.
And then something a long way off is a rat for a piece.
So what exactly is an Appalachian accent? I mean, we take it for granted living here, but there are certain features that are really interesting. We talked about pen and pin, or pin and pin, depending on where you come from.
Right.
All right, and there's something called the redundant pronoun.
Those people, they're all crazy. Most people, they're all crazy.
There you go.
The there is extra.
I mean, you don't say it every day, but, you know, it probably shows up every now and then.
Well, it's a way of emphasizing something, right? Giving a little kick. Mm. Here's a couple older features that are pretty rare. The a prefix, like I'm a going to the store.
I'm fixing to die, yeah.
Yeah, right? Seems to me very rare. I almost never hear that.
Do you hear that anymore, Rick, or do you remember hearing that growing up?
I think when people say that now, it's sort of like a play, you know. It's I'm a fixing to get out of here. You know, and there's a lot of play in Appalachian dialect, too, and the real way with words. And my father was a real master. One thing I should say is, like, cussing is like, in my family and many others, is like Appalachian punctuation. You know, my father had all these great metaphors. Something that looks really bad, my dad would say, that looks like a dog's ass sewed up with a log chain, and try to get that image out of your mind for a while.
Wait, again, say it slower.
Okay. That looks like a dog's ass sewed up with a log chain. And don't try that at home, please. I love dogs. So
what's a log chain?
Yeah, what is a log chain?
Big chain you use when you're logging to drag the logs around. So just a little contrasting images there for your listening pleasure.
Well, well, here's one more feature that's kind of old and fading, they say. It's the demonstrative them apples, for example. How about them apples?
It's like, how you like them apples is the correct way of delivering that.
I'm going to this.
You know, one expression that you hear, I used to hear from some people, especially rural, is these'uns and them'uns. And I say that some, like, these'uns are closer than them'uns. You know what I mean? Them'uns are usually farther away.
Well, even if you're not, I think, doing it in a jokey way, I think almost everyone can identify with speaking a different way with your parents, with your kids, at home when you're comfortable, than you do in a professional environment or on West Virginia Public Radio. And I mean, they call it code switching, right?
Exactly.
I think everybody
yeah.
does that to one extent or another. But one question is, should people make an effort to learn to talk in a more, you know, neutral, mainstream way? You don't want to use that word if you're interviewing for a job.
Well, and the Oak Ridge National Laboratory got in trouble recently because they had classes where people could accent reduction,
right,
they called
right.
it. Yeah. And so that was controversial, and they dropped it after people complained. But in my industry, of course, in broadcast, it's very common for students to go through and be told that they need to tone down their accent or, you know, even drop it entirely.
And code switching is something linguists talk about a lot, and it's something a lot of people do. I think it's one way to validate. And when I was teaching GED classes, you know, we were talking about writing and stuff, and I think it is great to talk the way we talk. We can really, you know, talk the bark off a tree, you know, but there are times when you're in certain situations, you do it. And like, I find myself doing it nowadays when I'm on the phone with someone who may be in a call center in, you know, Bangalore or wherever. So I will pronounce the number 9 and 5 differently than I otherwise would. You know, I'd pronounce the I.
Demonstrate, please.
9-5 versus 9-5. But here's something I think found was interesting is when I began learning Spanish, you know, I realized that Spanish may be the lost tribe of hillbillies, because a lot of things that Appalachians like to use in their speech, you can do in Spanish, like the double negative. Mm. Like, and actually in older versions of English and many Indo-European languages, double negatives add emphasis.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a line from Dr. Seuss, the Spanish version, "No me gusta nada," which literally means "it does not please me nothing." You know, if you would say that in English, you get really yelled at by the teacher, you know, but it's... And also, another thing that a lot of Spanish and other languages have is we say y'all, you know, so there's a correct form of y'all in Spanish, ustedes form, the mm-hmm. second person plural. The great thing about Appalachians, we have the double second person plural. That's all y'all, you know.
Right.
And usually when you say all y'all, you're telling off a whole group of people, too.
The lack of a second person plural is really a problem for English.
One thing, you can tell you're going north into Pennsylvania when you go from y'all land to Ewan's land. Do you know that? They have their own second person plural there, which is kind of interesting. And
where's that line in West Virginia, by the way? In general, I think the difference between a more southern accent and a more northern accent in West Virginia is the same line at which the hot dogs change.
Hmm.
So it's like Route 50, kind of, like Clarksburg area, because south of there you have the sweet chili hot dog, and north of there you have like the Yan's hot dog with the hot chili. But anyway, there definitely is a difference, and you can be from West Virginia and have more of a standard, you know, middle American accent. There's also a class aspect to this, isn't there?
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely. People who are living in Charleston who come from a more middle class background or upper middle class background do not speak the same way, and will even make fun of the people who speak that way who are from a lower socioeconomic background.
You know, it amazes me the way I hear people from the Charleston area, not to pick on them, and, you know, possibly Huntington too, talk about those people in southern West Virginia like they're some kind of barbarian tribe, you know, and it just really amazes me how they do. I always like that part of the state better, you know.
I think it's almost like the cousin you're embarrassed about or something. That's how they treat folks in southern West Virginia, rudely. Still to this day, if you want to portray stupidity, you just put on a redneck, stereotypical Appalachian and or southern accent, and that conveys stupid, right?
And by the same token, I think for a lot of Americans, any British accent makes you sound fantastically educated, whether it's, you know, really from a high class in Britain or not. I asked, I took a class in Oxford when I was in college, and I asked my tutor over there, you know, be honest, when English people hear Americans speak, do we all sound, you know, sort of like rednecks to you? And he said, no, you all sound like cowboys. It sounds like you're all from the frontier, which is very much, I think, the American stereotype in the English mind.
Is there an accent in America besides this hillbilly sort of accent that connotes stupidity so clearly? Is there anyone else?
I don't think stupidity, but there is an accent that I do not like at all, and that is the Boston accent. And I think it's because I associate it with Kennedys.
Like driving a car.
I find it very unpleasant.
I know you're conservative, but do you dislike the Kennedys so much that you will write off the entire Boston area?
I really disliked the Senator Ted Kennedy. And when I hear that, you don't hear it that often, honestly, as much as he had it or JFK had it.
Boston's interesting, too, because that's an area where it really does depend a lot on class and upbringing, whether you have that accent or not.
When people drop their R's, like, you know, I don't have the same animus there, but when but when people say, you know, going to the bar and driving a car, it's like, there's an R there, damn it. Yeah. You're not doing it right. goes back a long way. Aristophanes' play, the one about war where the women go on a sexual strike. What's the name? The Lysistrata. You know, a big comic effect probably even then was the Spartans had their dialect and the Athenians had theirs. You know, so this thing goes back a long way. And there's even biblical stories like where the accent really gives you away, and you know, that a couple of them I think are really interesting too.
But such as
chapter 12 of the book of Judges, there's a war between the Gileadites and the Ephraimites, and the Ephraimites lose, and the ones who survive are trying to get home. They get headed off at the pass, and the winners try to make everyone say the word shibboleth, which is the part of a plant that has seeds on it, which I did not realize that for a long time. And there was no SH sound in Ephraimite, so they'd say Sibboleth, I guess. And so you kill all the ones who didn't pronounce the thing right. And so then as now, like when Jesus was arrested, Peter was hanging out in the high priest's house while he was being interrogated. And, you know, they said, you were with that man. No, I wasn't. Yeah, your accent gives you away. You talk like a Galilean. So, I mean, Jesus was a hick too, probably, and all his people probably got razzed for their accents.
Hey, we want you to join us on the front porch. Do you have ideas for guests we should interview or tough topics to tackle? Send me an email, sfinn@wvpublic.org, or send us a tweet. I'm at Radio Finn, Lori's at WVPundet, and Rick is El Cabrero. That's the goat herder in Spanish, in case you're wondering. And unless Tudor's Biscuit World starts answering our calls, you can underwrite the front porch. Reach an audience of some of the best thinkers in Appalachia and beyond. Email me at sfinn@wvpublic.org for more information. I want to get back to this idea of Appalachian stereotypes and how they have real effects on people's self-image, on how they're judged by the world and the outside world. One of the stories in the AP story was about a woman who, as a girl, went to New York City on a trip. And she's, to this day, still mortified because she asked for a pen, but it sounded like pin. And the people.
So she said it right.
She said it right. But the people at the front desk in New York didn't understand her. And to this day, she still is mortified by that. I mean, what a burden to have to carry around. Does this mean that we should be teaching
our
children?
You should be zen about the whole pen thing. Let me just, you know.
Well, it's also ironic. You know, you have to wonder who it was who didn't understand her, because New York is such a melting pot in many ways, and there's so many different accents. And as a New Yorker, you'd think that someone would be more able to kind of translate.
What I really love to do is speak Spanish with a hillbilly accent around native speakers. I can drive them to tears like in minutes, you know, like, yo soy un hombre de los pobres. I am a friend of the poor. amigo de los pobres, sorry.
There's a law professor at Yale who's one of my favorites. When I was there, Bill Eskridge, he's one of the country's leading authorities on legislation, legislative interpretation. Brilliant, brilliant guy. He's from West Virginia. I think he grew up in Princeton and hasn't spent any time, I think, you know, to speak of here in decades, but still has a really, really strong Appalachian accent, despite having lived for most of his life, I think, in the Northeast. And it made him so approachable I think, even for people who weren't from here, that he sounded, you know, he's obviously brilliant, so he doesn't have to worry that there's a stereotype of, you know, being unsophisticated. It made him sound friendly.
Well, and I think that my experience has been people sometimes use that stereotype to their advantage, because, you know, if everyone expects you to be stupid and then you play stupid, that can be a little secret weapon that you kind of hide back for when you need it.
In the Black community, they call that signifying, you know. Little reflection just on language generally, though, because, you know, I kind of geek out on language and linguistics, and there are certain things I think are just miraculous about the world, like the Big Bang, everything coming out of nothing. And the other, language seems to have emerged suddenly among all human populations fairly quickly. There are no human groups without it. We're wired for language and grammar. I mean, it's really in our brains to do it. Every day, every person who can speak comes up with sentences that no one's ever said before. We all do it all the time, and they're grammatical in a way. And so it's just, I just think it's really fascinating that how it really is like a living thing and how it emerges and grows and evolves. So
having young children and watching them acquire the language is so, it's just a fascinating, fascinating thing to hear how they come up with their own little ways of speaking. And that's another thing that I always found interesting, was that your accent has a lot more to do with your peer group than with your parents.
Yeah.
And, you know, I that's so interesting, because you certainly spend a lot of time at home, but apparently for kids, they're conditioned to imitate their peers and not so much their parents, which is probably an advantage to fitting in.
Well, that's the thing. So that says a lot about accent. Mm-hmm. Accent is a way of trying to fit in. So I'll talk about my wife really quickly. Her mother and her grandparents were from upstate New York, but her father is from Gilmer County. And when she was growing up, especially early on, she spent a lot of time around her mom and her grandparents. And she and her sister have less of what you'd call a stereotypical Appalachian accent than you would think growing up where they grew up here in West Virginia. But her younger brothers both basically hung out a lot with their friends growing up. And so within the same family, you have these differences where, you know, there are different levels of that sort of Appalachian accent going on. And is this something that people turn up, turn down based on how they want to present themselves to the world? I asked you, Rick, have you ever considered like tuning down your accent, trying to sound more like Tom Brokaw to be able to portray yourself differently?
Hell no. But yeah, no, that would never. I think it's a shame that when people feel like that. And I think I'm all about codes. Like, I taught my kids not to cuss in school, although they're really good at it when they're off stage, especially my daughter. She could cuss the paint off a battleship, you know, but that's a code switching thing. And
But what about the other way? What if you were around people who had a very much stronger Appalachian? Would you turn it up a notch?
I think we probably do that unconsciously. Yeah. I think it's something we do.
You know, people make fun of politicians like Hillary Clinton for, you know, dropping their G's when they're in South Carolina. And, I think that's, it's obvious, it's more recognizable when somebody like that does it, but it's something that everybody does, I think, to one degree or another.
I'm gonna psychoanalyze you a little bit, Rick. I'm gonna say that I think that because you identify with the poor, you want people to hear your accent full on as much as possible. You wouldn't want to drop it so you could sound more like the ruling classes.
I wouldn't want to drop it to sound like the ruling class. Although around here, the ruling classes, some of them talk like I do. I'm not going to name any names or anything. But,
Jim Justice.
I don't really know him that well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I haven't really.
Does he have an accent? I haven't really heard.
You know, so who doesn't have an accent? Do I not have an accent?
I don't hear much of an accent in you. Much. But that makes sense because you're from Iowa, which, you know, I guess the Midwestern accent.
And I don't think you do. But that's because we are the dominant. We just happen to be born in places that speak the dominant paradigm, the dominant dialect.
Someone from Massachusetts would probably think I sounded a little bit Southern.
You know, white is kind of this category that means you don't have to worry about being discriminated against. It doesn't have much meaning except for that. My accent, I just happen to fall into that. And
you don't think yours has changed at all after so many years of being here?
Not really. And
I was in Iowa. They kind of sound like you over there.
I don't say my G's. It's a minor thing. It's a minor transgression. Mm-hmm. I will say this. My parents are not from Iowa. My parents are from Arkansas and Missouri. Mm-hmm. And my mom, who grew up in Arkansas, where everybody else has accents, really does not. And she made a very conscious decision to lose it because she didn't like how it sounded, because she thought people were discriminating against her in the north where she moved because she sounded different. Mm-hmm. So there's that too. Would you be concerned if your boys started to speak a little with a heavy Appalachian accent?
I did think about it. The year after we got married, we lived in Alabama and considered staying there. And in Alabama, I would say it's much, the deep South accent is much more pervasive across classes, in the sense that, you know, even very educated, you know, upper class people in Alabama have it. And, you know, it did cross my mind, wow, they would definitely leave here speaking with a very Southern accent if we had had kids at the time. But, you know, it is what it is.
Is there anything else?
Spanish, they have cuss words that I was jealous of when I first understood. I was like, my favorite one is like, yo cago en la leche de tu madre, which is kind of like, to say it gently, I crap in the milk of your mother. And when I first learned that expression, I was an adult. I was like, I could have used that in junior high, man. I could have got a lot of mileage with that.
I just, crap in the milk of your mother.
Yeah, they would use probably a stronger noun there. But yeah, that's one of the better ones.
All right, I have an underwriter this week. The underwriter is my brother, because I can't find another underwriter. And so he decided to come on board at a really reasonable level, folks. Today's Front Porch is brought to you by Jeff Finn, making his brother look bad since 1979. Find out more at jeffisawesome.org.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you, Jeff.
I'm forced to say that now until we find an actual underwriter. So if you're interested, shoot me an email.
I think you should keep working the biscuit angle. Sooner or later, he's bound to crack.
All right. Until then, I'm Scott Finn, Executive Director at West Virginia Public Broadcasting. I'm joined by Rick Wilson and Lori Lynn. And thanks for joining us.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I still love, I need to say this again. Tell me what it was your dad said.
That looks like a dog's ass sewed up with a log chain.
I still love, that looks like a dog's ass sewed up with a log chain.
That's D. Wilson, my old man.
That's gonna spread, that'll go viral, I'm sure.